Welcome to Workplace English Pod, a great way to improve your English on the go. Workplace English Pod is brought to you by Workplace English Training e-Platform, the Internet's largest business English resource for learners and teachers of business English. You can subscribe to Workplace English Training e-Platform at www.workplace-english-training.com and get access to podcast transcripts, study notes, interactive exercises, and thousands of additional resources in the training center. Business meetings, making plans. In planning a business event such as a conference, the type of language that we use commonly includes verbs which refer to the future. In this podcast, we will see how the future simple tense, will, going to, and the present continuous tense can be used to refer to future actions. We will also look at examples of how modal verbs can be used in discussing business plans. During the course of planning a business conference or workshop, we often need more than one meeting to plan the event. In this lesson, we will listen to extracts from two meetings, one to plan a business conference, and the other to discuss and assign specific tasks. The type of language that is used in a planning meeting depends on the topic of discussion. For example, to discuss actions or tasks that need to be done, we use modal verbs such as have to and need to. To talk about future actions, we use going to, the future simple tense, will, and the present continuous tense. We will also look at language that is related to making decisions and assigning tasks. You are now going to listen to a conversation from a business meeting on planning a business conference. The participants are William, Kate, and Brian, who are colleagues at a global investment banking firm. Listen to the dialogue and identify the various requirements they discuss during the meeting.
Well, the theme of the conference has been confirmed as corporate social responsibility. Okay, what we need to do next is draw up a list of tasks for the coming week. The first two priorities are booking a suitable venue and identifying potential keynote speakers. Any suggestions for the venue?
How about the plaza? It worked well for us at last year's conference.
Actually, I thought we could also check out that new convention center downtown. It's sure to have all the facilities and will probably be cheaper than a hotel.
Great. We'll have to put both of those down as possibilities.
We also have to place advertisements to get delegates for the conference, right?
Yes, we do.
Apart from the usual channels, why don't we make invitations to send out to other firms and some of our other clients as well?
That's a good idea. Yes, we can design flyers and also send out some personalized invitations to companies that may be interested in sending delegates to the conference.
So we also need to create a mailing list for those we'll be sending invitations to.
Shouldn't we send out the invitations by the end of the week?
Yes, which means we need to create the mailing list and print the invitations by Thursday.
Shall we design the invitations and flyers in-house or get them done by an external designer?
We'll probably save time if we do it ourselves. It could take a while to explain what we need to someone new.
I agree. I'll forward a request to the graphics department and ask them to send us a choice of three design templates by tomorrow. Now, about the keynote speakers. Any thoughts on whom we can invite?
I heard Sean McNally from Asia Wide Bank at a seminar last month. He'd be great.
How many speakers do we need?
Well, let me see. One keynote session and two plenary speakers per day, which means we need 15 speakers.
And what's the time frame in which we have to finalize the list of speakers?
We'll have to send out the requests by the end of the month at the latest, and confirm the participants by the end of June. We'll also need a list of at least 5 backup speakers to contact, in case any of the first 15 are unavailable.
What about the topics for the plenary sessions?
Good point. Let's think about those and meet again this afternoon to finalize the topics. Any questions?
A planning meeting is usually chaired by a senior member of the team, who asks questions and invites the others to express their views or suggestions. In this meeting, William is the chair. He asks leading questions about important areas that need to be discussed. In William's opening statement,
He uses different verb forms when speaking about different aspects of the planning. Let's hear his opening statement again. Try to identify the different verb forms that he uses.
Well, the theme of the conference has been confirmed as corporate social responsibility. Okay, what we need to do next is draw up a list of tasks for the coming week. The first two priorities are booking a suitable venue and identifying potential keynote speakers. Any suggestions for the venue?
Firstly, he uses the present perfect tense when he says, "The theme of the conference has been identified as corporate social responsibility." The present perfect tense, "has been identified," is used to refer to actions that have been completed in the recent past. William also uses the passive voice here. In this case, the passive voice is used to indicate that it is someone other than the present speakers who have finalized the theme of the conference. It is not important for the others to know who, though. Secondly, William uses need to indicate requirement when he says,
"What we need to do next is draw up a list of tasks for the coming week."
Need to is a modal verb. There are a number of modal verbs, and they all have different functions. The function of need to is to convey necessity. When planning, we often say what is necessary and what is essential. The modal verbs have to and must are used to express what is essential. Later in the dialogue, Kate says,
"We also have to place advertisements to get delegates for the conference, right?"
She could have rephrased this by saying, "We also must place advertisements to get delegates for the conference, right?" However, in conversation, we tend to use have to instead of must. Brian uses another modal verb when suggesting the venue of the conference. Let's listen to what he says.
"Actually, I thought we could also check out that new convention center downtown. It's sure to have all the facilities and will probably be cheaper than a hotel."
In the sentence, "We could also check out that new convention center downtown," could is a modal verb. Could is used when making suggestions. Here are some other examples of making suggestions using the modal verb could. We could look for a conference center out of town. I could call the center and check their rates. We could use the conference center at head office. Sometimes, suggestions are phrased as questions. For example, Brian says,
"Apart from the usual channels, why don't we make invitations to send out to other firms and some of our other clients as well?"
Brian could have phrased this idea as a statement and said, "Let's make invitations to send out to other firms." Making a suggestion in the form of a statement, however, makes your statement closed and does not invite others to share their comments on your idea. By beginning his suggestion with the phrase, "Why don't we?" Brian is getting his point across and also inviting the others to respond to what he has said. Brian uses another modal verb in his next question. He asks,
"Shouldn't we send out the invitations by the end of the week?"
The question format again encourages the others to respond and adds to the flow of the conversation. Should and shouldn't are also modal verbs. Shouldn't we means the same as don't you think we should. Both phrases are used in conversation to make informal recommendations. A recommendation is slightly stronger than a suggestion. Here are some examples. Don't you think we should call them and check their rates first? Shouldn't we get more than two quotations? Don't you think we should get the work done in-house? Shouldn't we get some professional advice on this? Kate then asks a question about designing the invitations.
Shall we design the invitations and flyers in-house or get them done by an external designer?
Shall is yet another modal verb. It has the same meaning as will. The main difference is that will is used in statements and shall is used in questions. Kate would never say, "Will we design the invitations and flyers in-house?" She would probably also never say, "We shall design the invitations and flyers in-house." Although it's not grammatically incorrect to use shall and will in these ways, it's not common practice to do so. Here are some other examples. You would say,
We will ask them for their best price. You wouldn't say, we shall ask them for their best price. You would say, shall we place advertisements in the local press? You wouldn't say, will we place advertisements in the local press? William, Kate, and Brian meet the following day to continue their discussion on planning the conference. This time, their focus is on assigning the various tasks that need to be completed. William is chairing the meeting again. The chair makes decisions about who does what and by when. Moving on to what we discussed this morning. Firstly, it may not be viable to plan two plenary sessions a day for the conference. We're going to have a keynote speaker every morning, so let's keep it to one plenary session per afternoon. Any thoughts?
That sounds practical. Won't it affect our schedule, though? We've already worked it out on the basis of two plenary sessions a day.
We'll have to reschedule. It's just going to be too complicated to get 15 speakers for the conference.
Why don't we use the extra sessions to assign delegate presentations?
Without keynote speakers, you mean?
Yes, I'm sure that could work. I think the post-coffee session every afternoon could be assigned just for presentations and papers by the delegates who register for the conference.
That sounds like it could work. Brian, why don't you revise the schedule and hand in the final draft by the end of the day? Once that's done, we can print it out and send it along with the invitations.
Sure thing.
Great. Secondly, about the design templates for the invitations and flyers. The graphics department should be ready with them by this afternoon. Kate, could you drop by the design desk and check on the options later today?
Will do. How many templates are they giving us? Three?
Three or four. I'd also like you to narrow down the options to two templates. We'll select one of them when we meet again this evening.
Got it. I'll bring in the two final choices for the evening's meeting.
Great. If you like, you can also spend a little time with the designers and make changes to the templates if necessary.
Okay, that sounds good. What about the list of speakers we need to send the invites to?
Yes, I was just getting to that. I've got one list here for the keynote speakers and another for the speakers for the plenary sessions. I'd like each of you to take one list and call the speakers' offices to confirm their availability. Could you have this done by the end of the day?
Sure, no problem. We'll confirm availability by this evening.
Absolutely.
Let's hope everyone is available, or it's back to the drawing board to decide on potential speakers. One last thing for now, the venue. I'd like some price quotations from potential venues. Brian, could you find out the details for that convention center you were talking about yesterday?
No problem. I'll get right on it. Should I check for available dates, too?
Yes, but don't block the dates with them until we've made a decision about which venue we're going to be using. Kate, could you double-check with the Plaza for their latest quotation?
Sure. I'll give them a call right after the meeting.
Great. Let's meet back here at 5 p.m. to continue the discussion.
In this dialogue, William makes decisions about what is to be done and assigns specific tasks to Kate and Brian. When making plans during a meeting, it's a good idea to indicate to your listeners when you are moving from one topic to the next. Let's see how William indicates to the others that there is more than one item that he wants to talk about during the meeting. This is how he starts.
Moving on to what we discussed this morning. Firstly, it may not be viable to plan two plenary sessions a day for the conference.
Here, William uses the term, firstly, to indicate that there are other items on the agenda. Later in the conversation, he uses the word, secondly, as a marker to indicate that he is moving on to the next topic on the agenda. Let's listen to that.
Great. Secondly, about the design templates for the invitations and flyers. The graphics department should be ready with them by this afternoon.
Finally, William gives Kate and Brian a sign that they have reached the last item on the agenda for their present meeting by saying,
one last thing for now, the venue. I'd like some price quotations from potential venues.
Although it is not necessary to list out the items that are to be discussed, drawing attention to a change in topic helps you to structure your discussion and to indicate clearly to your conversation partners that you are moving on from one topic to the next. Next, let's take a look at how be going to is used to convey future meaning. When talking about the schedule for the conference, William says,
we're going to have a keynote speaker every morning, so let's keep it to one plenary session per afternoon.
Why didn't William say, we will have a keynote speaker every morning? So what's the difference between using will and going to? When talking about future plans, will is generally used when something is certain and had been decided on. It's been discussed and agreed on. Listen to these examples. We will have 15 speakers. We will use the conference facilities of the Great Metropolitan Hotel. We will design all publicity materials in-house. Be going to, on the other hand, expresses that something is still a plan. It expresses the idea that a person intends to do something in the future, but that it is not 100% certain. Here are some examples. We're going to select one from a number of designs. We're going to hire external caterers for the function. We're going to advertise in the print media and on the radio. All these statements refer to the planning phase. When the planning phase is complete, the statements can be expressed using will. We will select one from a number of designs. We will hire external caterers for the function. We will advertise in the print media and on the radio. Let's now look at how William uses will in the following exchange between him and Kate.
Won't it affect our schedule, though? We've already worked it out on the basis of two plenary sessions a day.
We'll have to reschedule. It's just going to be too complicated to get 15 speakers for the conference.
In this exchange, William says, "We'll have to reschedule," when Kate asks him how the change will affect their current schedule. Here, William is using will to indicate that he has just made a decision. Finally, let's take a look at the expressions William uses when he assigns tasks to Kate and Brian, and how his subordinates respond to him. This is what William says when he asks Brian to revise the schedule.
"Brian, why don't you revise the schedule and hand in the final draft by the end of the day?"
Here, William uses the phrase, "Why don't you?" to assign a task to Brian. Phrasing instructions as questions softens them and makes them sound more polite. It also encourages the listener to respond and to ask a question if necessary. William also uses a different question format in the following instruction that he gives to Kate.
"Kate, could you drop by the design desk and check on the options later today?"
Here, William uses the phrase, "could you?" to begin his instruction. "Could you?" is usually used to make polite requests. In the context of the meeting, however, it is understood by Kate to mean something stronger than a request. This is clearly an instruction. William uses a more direct phrase to assign a task when he says,
"I'd like each of you to take one list and call the speakers' offices to confirm their availability."
"I'd like" is short for "I would like." Use this phrase when you want to make a direct request. It leaves the person being spoken to in no doubt. Here are some examples of instructions which start indirectly and become more direct. "Jim, why don't you liaise with the design team about the press advert?" "Jim, could you liaise with the design team about the press advert?" "Jim, I'd like you to liaise with the design team about the press advert." "Paula, why don't you contact the potential speakers?" "Paula, could you contact the potential speakers?" "Paula, I'd like you to contact the potential speakers." We see that Kate and Brian sometimes repeat back the instructions to William to confirm that they have understood them. Let's listen to an exchange.
"I'd like each of you to take one list and call the speakers' offices to confirm their availability. Could you have this done by the end of the day?"
"Sure, no problem. We'll confirm availability by this evening."
Here, Brian repeats the instruction to confirm to William that he has understood. Repeating instructions can therefore have two uses. Firstly, you can check if you have understood correctly. Secondly, you can also let the other person know that you have been listening carefully to what they have said and that you have understood. In this lesson, we looked at how future simple tense will and going to are used to convey future meaning when making plans. We also looked at how modal verbs can be used to say what is necessary and what is essential, and how they can be used to make suggestions and recommendations. Finally, we looked at how to assign tasks using both direct and indirect language.
You can subscribe online at www.workplace-english-training.com.